Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. You can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org and on the WDIY app, as well as many streaming services. Today is August 27, 2025. The markets were up today with the Dow closing at 45,565, the NASDAQ at 21,590, and the S&P at 6,481. Tonight, we are talking about kind of health insurance and not health insurance. So I really wanted to learn more about something called healthcare sharing plans. I've had a couple clients who have engaged with this for their health costs, I will say, not their health insurance needs, but their healthcare cost, and have used these healthcare sharing plans. And I wanted to learn a little bit more about them. So I thought, what better way to learn more about them than to do a show on them? So I have some information on those. I'm not going to act like I'm an expert on it at all. I'm not even insurance licensed. But it's about education and trying awareness, I would say, more than awareness. But I am going to kind of talk about different healthcare options and then touch on the healthcare sharing plan as well. We are live tonight. We will take your questions. Bob and Cindy are in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic and I will do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810. You could talk live on air with us, or if you're not comfortable talking live, just give your question to Cindy and she'll write it down and bring it in to the studio. You can also send questions or show ideas to yourfinancialchoices.com. So healthcare sharing plans, what are they? And why did I want to talk about this? I've already kind of alluded to that. Healthcare costs are some of consumers' higher expenses, I would say. And I think it's important to understand your healthcare options, and it can be very confusing, and particularly confusing when you may be in a position where you have to pivot from what you traditionally have had for healthcare coverage. So typically, we are used to, you know, traditional methods of health insurance coverage when we're working, and we are working for employers that offer health insurance. You know, I'm not going to say every employer offers health insurance, but most employers, I would say, offer health insurance of, you know, a certain magnitude of employees. So they offer health insurance as potentially a fringe benefit. Quite often, the employer will pay part of the premiums for that health insurance, and sometimes the employee helps pay for it. And there could be some sharing in that cost. Depends on, you know, what the employer wants to provide. In fact, I will have said in the past, when you're looking for jobs, don't forget to weigh that as part of your criteria for benefits and compensation when you're looking for a job. Because if one employer requires you to pay, you know, $1,000 a month, and another employer, your participation is $200 a month, that could make a big difference in, you know, an overall compensation cash flow kind of situation. So again, let's start with kind of laying the groundwork for what we traditionally understand is healthcare insurance. And it is insurance compared to the healthcare sharing plans, which is not insurance, but a group of people come together to share in those costs. So we're going to kind of try to talk about the differences, but to understand the differences, I have to kind of talk about what we think of as traditional health insurance coverage. So employer-provided plans, and you know, the employer is usually the one who negotiates who the provider is of that health insurance coverage. Traditional health insurance is subject to state and federal regulations, including the Affordable Care Act. There's HIPAA rules. We're all aware of that, where, you know, privacy, health information privacy. They're subject to state insurance department oversight as well. Consumer protection, such as now pre-existing conditions. In fact, years ago, before the Affordable Care Act, health insurance companies could turn you away if you had a pre-existing condition, or maybe perhaps charge you, you know, exorbitant amounts of premiums because of that. But with the Affordable Care Act legislation back in the Obama administration, they prohibited health insurance companies from turning you away because of pre-existing conditions. And I believe that is, you know, outside of Medicare, so pre-Medicare age. I think Medicare, some of those policies can still factor in pre-existing conditions, but not on the initial application. Again, I'm not an insurance expert here. This is just about awareness tonight. So certain oversight, certain regulations, they also, part of the Affordable Care Act that prohibited turning you away because of pre-existing conditions, they also have minimal essential benefits. Minimal essential benefits for maternity, mental health, and preventative care. So keep this in mind as I move through the show and talk about the healthcare sharing plans. So certain minimal essential benefits, because this is all under state and federal regulations, so there's certain criteria they have to follow. Many of us know now, we go to the doctor, and if it's considered preventative, we, you know, don't have copay. At least I don't have a copay. I don't know if that is part of that Affordable Care Act legislation, but preventative care is typically, you know, I don't have to pay a copay when I have preventative care. And these insurance providers are also legally obligated to pay for covered services. All right. So think of health insurance through the employer. The employer is picking the provider. They're usually going through their HR department, and the HR department is vetting various health insurance providers and choosing that for you. Your employer may provide options to you, maybe a regular plan, maybe a high deductible health plan. A high deductible health plan might cost you less in premiums per month, but you have to reach higher thresholds of a deductible before you might have certain insurance reimbursements. All right. If you went with a regular plan with lower deductibles, then your premiums might be a little bit higher, but you might be limited to the plans available to you based on what the employer has negotiated with, you know, those insurance carriers as to what they're going to provide to you. And there could be ancillary benefits as well. For example, if you had a high deductible health plan, a qualified high deductible health plan through your employer, you may be eligible then to also have a health savings account. That health savings account provides further benefits. Tax benefits is what I'm talking about in that case, that can help an employee who has a high deductible health plan save additional money to save income taxes on a pre-tax basis and build up extra funds in an account called a health savings account to use toward qualified medical expenses. So there could be certain benefits there. When we have a employer-provided plan and I'm having to pay for health insurance through my payroll, that is not subject to federal income tax or Medicare tax. So I get extra tax benefits from some of these plans as well. So they may or may not cost as much depending on your employer, how much they're covering, and which kind of plan you elect to take within that menu option that they give you. Okay, we're at our first break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY has been broadcasting since 1995.
This is Mayor Ken Smith. Congratulations to WDIY for signing on the air.
We're with Commissioner Frank Donches of the Bethlehem Police Department.
We welcome Dr. John on the blend today.
Bob Durow composed, conducted, and played much of the Schoolhouse Rock music.
Three is a magic number.
Second antidote to violence is to speak up against it.
WDIY for 30 years.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. If you have questions, you can speak live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live, you can just give your question to Cindy. The phone number is 610-758-8810. We're talking about health insurance and healthcare sharing plans tonight. I need to lay the groundwork of what we understand basically. Again, I'm not an insurance agent, basically around health insurance to then further explain health care sharing plans. And I'm doing the show because I wanted to learn more about it. And it's very interesting. So as I mentioned, traditional health insurance is subject to state and federal regulations, which then ... is going to tell you that perhaps and understood that the healthcare sharing plans I'm going to talk about later are not subject to those same federal and state regulations. But obviously, they've become quite more prominent in recent years, I would say. There seems to be like a snowball effect on some of these. And even though they might not have those same regulations, there's obviously must be some attraction to them and that they're getting embraced. So I think it's important to understand options for people. So when I talk about the health insurance through your employer, that's typically what we call a group plan. And so there could be lower costs when we're in a group plan because the employer is covering, you know, a number of employees, sometimes very big corporations, and they may be able to negotiate better rates for health insurance through that, you know, the magnitude of the people they have. So your employer may be able to get better insurance rates for you as an employee and them as an employer because of the size of the group they're insuring. And it could be better prices than you would get if you were having to buy it privately. All right. So this is another important point. So group insurance has those benefits that I mentioned. If you're an employee, you save income tax on the amounts you're paying toward that health insurance, and you're not taxed on the amount that the employer may be covering for you. So that's an income tax benefit. If you have a high deductible health plan, you may be able to do a health savings account, and that would be a pre-tax deduction, and that pre-tax, after-tax, it's you don't pay taxes on it. It saves you taxes at the federal level, state level, Social Security, Medicare, so a health savings account. There's certain limitations on how much you can put into the health savings account depending on if you have a single member plan or a family plan. So some advantages there. Group coverage, though. When we talk about group coverage, some people think medical expenses are a deduction on Schedule A of your tax return. It's an itemized deduction. Group coverage does not qualify for that because you're already getting to tax breaks, so you can't double dip on that. And my experience is most people don't get a deduction for most medical expenses. Where I usually see people getting deductions for medical expenses is when people are much older, they have nursing care or assisted care or, you know, very, very high medical expenses with what would I want to say, maybe hearing aids or having to you know, wheelchairs, equipment, things like that. So, and then their income's low. And they might be also charitably inclined. More people do not itemize these days because of the very high standard deduction. So not necessarily, you don't get a tax benefit if you're in a group plan, but you may get a tax benefit if you're in private insurance. So I talked about the employer-provided insurance, and it could be any traditional health insurance provider that you're aware of, that we know all the names, I'm not going to mention. And that could also apply for people who are no longer employed, that if they were employed and they lose employment for a number of reasons, they may qualify for something called COBRA. And COBRA, people say, I'm going on COBRA. Well, COBRA stands for the Consolidated Omnibus Budget Reconciliation Act. So basically, COBRA, as we more, you know, prominently know it as, that allows individuals to continue their employer-sponsored health insurance after experiencing a qualifying event like a job loss or reduced work hours or if there's like a divorce or a death. So there's some other extensions. So I'll talk about that in a minute. But I wanted to make sure that people understood that COBRA isn't different insurance than what you had as an employee. It's the same insurance you had as an employee. The difference is that you're going to pay more for it because typically you have to pay the full premium on it. You're not going to get that employer contribution to it. So let's talk about COBRA for a minute. And this is still considered group insurance. And I'm going to differentiate why I keep saying group insurance versus private insurance in a little bit here. So the standard duration of COBRA insurance is for employees up to 18 months of coverage after a job loss or reduction in hours, as I mentioned. But it's also could apply for dependents, which they may qualify for up to 36 months in cases like divorce, death of the covered employee, or loss of dependent status. So dependents will have a little bit longer that they could use it. Can you imagine if, you know, you've had health insurance coverage for many years and you lose your spouse who provided it, and now what do? You weren't working. You always had your spouse's health insurance. That's why COBRA is extended longer for those dependents who are in those kinds of situations that may not have been able to be anticipated, divorce or death, or as I said, loss of dependent status. So under the Affordable Care Act regulations, they also extended coverage to children of the insured up to age 26. Once a child turns 26, they have to go off their parents' insurance, but up until age 26, they can be covered. Whereas years before that, before the Affordable Care Act regulations, a child would get kicked off once they were like adult status, like age 21. So the Affordable Care Act extended that. And even if your child is married, you can still cover them. So for example, our oldest daughter got married young. The health insurance through her husband's employer plan would have cost so much more money to have husband and wife insurance. And it didn't really cost us anymore because we still had two other kids at home. So our family plan didn't cost us anymore to have our daughter on it, whereas my son-in-law's health insurance would have cost more to add my daughter. So up until age 26, we could continue to cover her on our health insurance, and we did. So that was nice. So there's a standard duration there. There's also a disability extension. If a covered individual is determined to be disabled by Social Security Administration within the first 60 days of COBRA coverage, they can extend their coverage 29 months. But basically, just so you know, COBRA coverage is the same as what you had while you're employed. It's not different. People say, I'm going on COBRA. Don't talk like it's a different insurance. It just means you're paying a different amount. And it's because you're typically subject to 100% of the premium plus an administrative fee quite often. Now, some employers may not charge that administrative fee. And some employers I've seen where if they've terminated the employee, they sometimes will say, we'll cover your COBRA for X number of months. So just because you're going to go on COBRA doesn't mean you necessarily would have to pay the full freight on that. But generally, that is what I see. But you must enroll within 60 days of losing that coverage in order to be eligible for COBRA. So that's important. When we come back, we're going to talk about switching within COBRA plans or going off COBRA. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY presents Lehigh Valley Hollywood Squares, a live game show experience like no other. Join your favorite WDIY hosts and local celebrities for a night of laughs, trivia, and high-energy fun, all to support the station you love. Tickets are on sale now. Don't miss this nostalgic interactive event that's perfect for all ages. Mark your calendar for October 28, 6 p.m. at the State Theater in Easton and help keep public radio strong. For details and tickets, visit WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. And we're talking about health care sharing plans tonight. I haven't gotten to that part yet because you have to understand kind of some of the parameters around regular health insurance coverage to understand the difference between that and these health care sharing plans. So right now we're talking about employer coverage and going from employer coverage where the employer's paying for part and you're paying for part to maybe perhaps losing your employer coverage because of a job change or job loss, reduction in hours, you know, losing a spouse or something like that, and then moving into COBRA. So we talked about COBRA and making sure you get signed up within 60 days and understanding that you might be paying the full freight on that cost. You need to understand what those costs are. Sometimes what you might want to do is kind of like lock in early. I've also heard and seen, remember that I said you have to do it within 60 days. I think some people kind of play that a little bit and they may not sign up for it the first month and avoid that cost and maybe sign up for it, you know, in day 58 or something like that. I'm not encouraging that or saying that. I've just seen people do that. Now, there is a question about, like, can you switch the plan? Because I said it's going to be your same health insurance coverage. And generally, you are locked into the same health plan you had before that qualifying event, before you had the job loss. But you may switch plans during your former employer's open enrollment period, just like active employees. So remember, if it's 18 months, and let's pretend you lost your job, and open enrollment's October 1st. And let's say you lost your job on September 1st. Well, you're going to have the same coverage, but maybe that's expensive for you. And so October 1st, you want to switch to that high deductible health plan because it costs less. Then you could switch if open enrollment's October 1st, you could switch then. But otherwise, you're locked into the same health plan you had. Now, this COBRA, remember, is kind of either like a bridge until you get another job where you might have other qualified health insurance, or maybe you're just bridging yourself to Medicare age, to age 65, or you're bridging yourself to some other kind of life event or change. And we'll talk about that in a minute. So if your employer does change their group health plan, you must switch to the new plan offered, so that you may not even get the same plan if your employer changes plans. And that happens from time to time too. I know for years we had one healthcare provider forever and ever. We all loved it. Then, you know, we switched for a couple of years, decided they didn't like that switch, and we went back to the original one we had. Now, you could take that COBRA just to bridge yourself to also what we call the marketplace insurance. So again, under the Affordable Care Act regulations, what was developed was a marketplace, and that marketplace health insurance is available through healthcare.gov to, you know, you could go and check out healthcare plans there, healthcare.gov, and or state-run healthcare marketplace coverage. So, for example, Pennsylvania, where we're airing out of, has penny.com, P-E-N-N-I-E.com, P-E-N-N-I-E.com. But what I actually really like about the marketplace websites as well is you can go on there and kind of vet out a bunch of different health insurance providers and check out different kinds of companies that are offering what different kind of coverage, whether you actually go through the marketplace or not. And this is where I want to go back to going off of Kober, but this is where I go to talking about group coverage versus private insurance. So the group coverage is the employer is COBRA, that's group coverage. When we go on the marketplace, even it's not considered really group coverage anymore. It's kind of like private. You're getting it privately, but you're doing it through the marketplace. The benefit of the marketplace is if you could qualify for subsidies because of your income, that's the only way you get the subsidies. And those are called premium tax credits, and it can offset your premium. So the employer provided and or COBRA might be one level of health insurance cost per month. The marketplace might be another, and they're going to tell you what it costs for various kinds of plans, gold plan, silver plan, bronze plan, depending on the state you live in, depending on your family size, depending on if you're a smoker or not. They have, you know, you can go in and play with some of the numbers and your income. So if you're making $200,000, you certainly could go in and, you know, sign up through the marketplace, but your income's going to throw you out of any kind of subsidies. But if you go in there and you play with the numbers and you say, oh gosh, well, I lost my job and this year I know I'm only going to make, you know, $40,000, then it's going to give you an idea of what kind of subsidy you can have to offset that premium. The reason I want to mention this is because when we're trying to negotiate or navigate what kind of health insurance we're going to get or what kind of health care sharing plan we're going to get, you need to understand the different kinds of costs that you may incur depending on which road you choose to go down. All right. Now, let me go backwards for a minute. So when we're on COBRA and we want to switch and perhaps go to the marketplace because, man, we find out we're not getting that other job. We are going to be kind of lower income and I need to get, a better cost health insurance. Then I might want to check out this marketplace stuff. Or maybe we're going to do this for, you know, January. Maybe there's certain open enrollment periods. And I don't think I'm going to have time to talk about that. But there are certain windows where you can, you've got to be careful. If you go off COBRA, you're off COBRA. So you want to be careful about that. You're not going to be able to go back on it. So if you go like onto the marketplace, you're not going to be able to switch back to COBRA. But you can leave COBRA early and you can go to the marketplace. You're just not going to be able to go back. If you terminate COBRA early without a qualifying event, you must wait until the next open enrollment period to enroll in the marketplace coverage. So meaning you can't stop the COBRA and just for the fun of it, because you elected to go into it, and then just go on the marketplace, you have to kind of have what they say, a qualifying event. All right. So you can leave COBRA early and switch to a marketplace plan. But then during the marketplace open enrollment period, that's when you would do that. Or if you experience a special enrollment event. And this goes into play for other kinds of insurance, which I'll talk about in a minute. So you could have a special enrollment event like a marriage or the birth of a child. And that comes into play for even things like flexible spending accounts. Like if your employer provides a flexible spending account and you have a child, you can go in outside of open enrollment and say, I want to start saving for my flexible spending account for childcare or flexible spending for healthcare because you had a qualifying event or a child goes off of a plan or something. So just keep that in mind that there could be special enrollment periods for you as well. But once you switch to a marketplace plan, you cannot go back to COBRA. If you exhaust your COBRA coverage, you qualify for a special enrollment period to join a marketplace plan. So let's say you did elect the COBRA coverage and you were covered through May. Well, that's not the normal open enrollment period for the marketplace, but there's a special enrollment period for you because you fell off of the COBRA coverage in May. So now you could go sign up on the marketplace. Okay, when we're at the halfway point, and when we come back, I'm going to just kind of tie that up and then try to get into talking about the healthcare sharing plans. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
If you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live, just give your question to Cindy and Bob will run it into me. So we talked about employer-provided insurance. COBRA is the same thing. You just have to pay full freight on that. You can switch from COBRA to the marketplace, or if you got another job, you can switch to the new employer's coverage. But the marketplace is where you would go if you thought you might qualify for some subsidies. The health insurance marketplace is a federally or state-run platform where you can compare, as I mentioned, health insurance plans based on the coverage and the cost. You can enroll in or change plans, again, depending on what the open enrollment period is, and apply for those subsidies you heard me mention called premium tax credits. You can get those up front, which we call an advanced premium tax credit, or you can wait until you file your tax return and run it through the tax software to see if you would qualify with your income then and get the subsidy on your tax return as a refund. If your income is much higher than what you thought it was going to be and you had gotten the advanced credits that you are not entitled to, then you would have to pay those back on your tax return. There was some expansion of the income tiers that made one eligible and or dictated how much would have to be paid back. That is going away with the recent tax legislation in 2026. So if you had subsidies this year for 2025, you may or may not be limited on how much you would have to pay back or what you would be eligible for. But in 2026, the subsidies are going back to, I think it's 400% of the poverty level. If your income is below 400% of the poverty level, then you may be eligible for some part of those subsidies. But once your income goes over that, then you would not be. But in recent years, there was some wiggle room on that, and you weren't having to pay back the whole amount, even if you were over the 400%, because they capped what you had to pay back. And that would still be applicable for 2025, but would be going away in 2026. So who qualifies to enroll in marketplace plans? You have to be in the U.S., you have to be a citizen or a legal resident, and you cannot be incarcerated. Marketplace plans are the only health insurance option that offers premium tax credits and cost-sharing reductions. So that was another little benefit, lower deductibles and copays for eligible individuals. For example, a family of four earning up to $120,000 may qualify for a subsidy. And what's covered on those marketplace plans? Again, marketplace plans, you guys, are the regular health insurance companies out there. They've just agreed to be on the marketplace. It's the same health insurance you may have even had at your employer, or it's, you know, plans that you're very familiar with their names. Marketplace plans must include 10 essential health benefits, such as doctor visits, emergency services, prescription drugs, maternity and newborn care, mental health services, and preventative care. And as I mentioned, there's different tiers. The bronze, for example, has lower premiums but higher out-of-pocket costs. The silver has moderate premiums and cost best for the subsidies, it says, and then gold and platinum, which have higher premiums and lower out-of-pocket cost. But the enrollment period for those is typically November 1st to January 15th, unless you have a special enrollment, which is available year-round for qualifying events, as I mentioned, job loss, marriage, and birth. And much of this information, you know, I put into to one of the AI generators. So just so you all know that some of this information is very available and available to people to look up and find more information on. Outside of those employer-provided health insurance, the COBRA, the Marketplace, individuals can also just go direct to any of those insurance companies. You can use a broker to help you buy and navigate what kind of health insurance would be better for you, for your family, for your, you know, prescription needs, medical needs, et cetera. And you can just buy direct. Sometimes there are situations where you can't afford health insurance regardless, even if it's, you know, maybe on the marketplace, your income is too low. Maybe you are poverty and you have no assets, no income, and you'd be eligible for Medicaid. I'm not going to talk about Medicaid, but Medicaid is basically, you know, I think income-based. But perhaps you don't want Medicaid. Maybe you work and you just can't afford the health insurance or the employer, but you make too much money to qualify for Medicaid. There might be other options for you as well that still would have kind of the coverage that you might find typical. Hospitals may have some programs available that you could tap. They have typically, or what we've seen, are programs called charity care or financial assistance policies or discount programs that they offer for underinsured or uninsured people. There's also certain tools online that you may find associated with maybe a hospital in your area where you could do something called a price checker to review costs. And typically, you can also get information through social workers and sometimes even those at the hospital about Medicaid and or CHIP. CHIP is for children up to age 19 that may be free or a low cost for people. And just kind of know that that might be available for you as well. So now having all that information. Oh, and the reason I want to talk about group and private insurance is there's always certain tax benefits to kind of the health insurance we're getting. So I told you if it's a group plan, we already are getting an upfront kind of tax benefit through our payroll. And if it's a private plan, we may be able to itemize. If you itemize deductions, it would be considered, you know, an eligible medical expense for that. But I don't usually see that for people. But where it could also make a difference is for people who are self-employed. Self-employed people can get, a deduction off their income, not off their profit, not off their Schedule C if they're self-employed, but off of their total income, a deduction for the self-employed health insurance that is not group. So it has to be individual or private insurance, and Medicare premiums also qualify for that. All right. So that could be like a little extra tax benefit. So sometimes when you're trying to evaluate the cost of health insurance, the pros and cons of health insurance versus these healthcare sharing plans, you want to go in kind of understanding what the bottom line net cost might be to you. You also have to have a real understanding of your potential healthcare needs. Obviously, if you're on prescriptions and you've had medical history or your family has medical history, then, you know, exploring some of these other options may not be relevant to you or applicable or even appropriate. But let's talk about some of these health care, I'm getting used to saying it, healthcare sharing plans, because it is, to me, something that people should be aware of. And healthcare sharing programs operate on a community-based cost-sharing model rather than traditional insurance. And here's a breakdown of how they work. Again, this is, I put it into, you know, one of the AI generators. It's typically, but other research has told me this as well. So this was just to kind of summarize it for my listeners. Typically, it's faith based nonprofits. There's limited oversight. There's no legal obligation to pay, self-regulated guidelines. There's eligibility requirements, and it may exclude pre-existing conditions, and there is no legal obligation, as I mentioned, to pay. Members of a healthcare sharing program contribute a monthly share amount into a collective pool, and when a member has a medical expense, the program uses funds from that pool to help pay for the eligible cost. This is something I think that people might or could explore and see if it fits for you or if it makes sense for you. The two clients I've had that have done it have had no complaints. In fact, they have been very happy with it. This is not an endorsement. This is awareness. They've been very happy with it. The one client said they've had no complaints. They've only used it for preventative care. They had the lab work was covered 100%. Office visits were covered. They may be eligible for lower cost visits because it's not going through insurance providers. That's what my one client said, that it actually ended up costing less when the provider was so happy they didn't have to go through an insurance company. They paid the expenses directly to the caregiver and then submitted for the expense reimbursement, and they received it within 24 or 48 hours. So that, again, was through this one of the healthcare sharing programs. But there, you know, there are some cautions that people would have to be aware of. There is the monthly contribution, so you might equate that to monthly premiums. Each member pays a fixed monthly amount, similar, again, to premiums. The amount may vary based on age, family size, and chosen plan. Medical need submission. When a member incurs a medical expense, they submit a need to the organization. It includes bills, treatment details, and documentation. Eligibility review. The organization reviews the need to ensure it meets the sharing guidelines. Some expenses may not be shareable, and they point out pre-existing conditions, cosmetic surgery, that kind of thing. Funds distribution, if approved, the cost is shared among the members, and the members are either paid directly to the provider or reimbursed to the member. And in my client's case, it was reimbursed to them directly. Direct payment or reimbursement. Some programs use third-party administrators to negotiate bills. Others require the members to pay upfront and get reimbursed. And my other client had said that the healthcare share program suggested to her to go in and say, if I pay cash, how much would I pay? And another note my other client had said is one of the care providers could not get their arms around that they didn't have insurance. When they said, no, I want to self-pay, I don't have insurance, they couldn't understand it. They wanted their insurance card. And they said, oh, I don't have an insurance card. I'm going to pay. So you may run into some resistance, but for the most part, both of these parties have had other, you know, positive experiences getting reimbursed. Now, there were some key terms to know. They have these terms called personal responsibility amount or annual household portion. So when we think, when on the insurance side, we think deductibles. And on this side, they call it personal responsibility amount versus, like, you know, coinsurance or copay. And then annual household portion might be similar to the deductible we hear about. So you pay before the sharing. It's the amount you pay before the sharing begins. And then there could be sharing limits. So some programs cap how much can be shared per incident or annually. And here's the big one that I think people would have to be careful about. Pre-existing conditions, those are often subject to waiting periods or limited sharing. And you may find that they may not, you know, even allow the pre-existing conditions. They, like, heart issues would be, you know, probably throw you out. Provider choice, many allow you to choose any provider, though some have preferred networks. And then they go through, you know, an example. If I had like a $5,000 hospital bill, I would pay, let's say my personal responsibility amount is $1,000. And then I submit for the $4,000 need. The program reviews and approves it, and other members' monthly contributions are pooled to cover the $4,000. And then I receive my reimbursement, or the provider receives it directly. And that sounds like it might be kind of straightforward. I guess it would depend on one's experience. And, you know, if you were going to explore something like this, you would certainly want to explore the various organizations that do provide these healthcare share options. There are a number of them. Again, I mentioned they're faith-based typically, so they may have their own requirements as to your faith and demonstrating that. And you would want to see if that fits within, you know, the criteria that you want to, you know, abide by. Folks, we are talking about kind of health insurance options, I would say, or healthcare sharing options. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services, including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Get ready, Lehigh Valley. WDIY presents Lehigh Valley Hollywood Squares, a live game show experience like no other. Join your favorite WDIY hosts and local celebrities for a night of laughs, trivia, and high-energy fun, all to support the station you love. Tickets are on sale now. Don't miss this nostalgic interactive event that's perfect for all ages. Mark your calendar for October 28, 6 p.m. at the State Theater in Easton, and help keep public radio strong. For details and tickets, visit WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. Tonight, we're talking about awareness for healthcare cost coverage. Traditionally, we think insurance, but there is a rising awareness of options for people called healthcare sharing. I want to make sure I emphasize it is not insurance. So full disclosure, it's not insurance, but it may be an option for people who feel they can fit certain criteria. I would say particularly probably people who are, you know, healthy, who don't have pre-existing health conditions, and may, you know, either can't afford or don't want to afford traditional health insurance coverage, you know, maybe because they don't like the plans that would be available to them, or it really is just cost prohibitive and they're looking for other options. So this is awareness. And the I've had a couple clients who have it, so I really wanted to know more about it and thought we should research it. But I think that I always end the show saying be proactive, not reactive. I think it's really important to kind of make sure that you understand you're comparing apples to apples. It's not apples to apples. It's actually apples to oranges. But from a cost standpoint, you could say apples to apples, because you'd want to make sure that any tax benefits you could get from what might be traditional insurance, perhaps through the marketplace where someone gets subsidies and maybe they're not actually paying anything, that because there is a whole swath of people that may qualify for that, then if you can get it for a very low cost or no cost because of the subsidies through the marketplace, then that could be a better option for you and or your family than perhaps this. But if I've seen other people where I've had a husband and wife who have to pay $2,000 a month for health insurance, and it's like, wow, if you're retired and you're not on Medicare eligible yet, that's a huge chunk out of your budget. And that was kind of the circumstances that my two clients found themselves in, and they explored this and have found it, you know, beneficial to them and their circumstances. So the big concern I would have would be the pre-existing condition. That was really a huge thing under the Affordable Care Act regulations when they said an insurance provider can't, you know, turn someone away because of a pre-existing condition. But these guys, they're not subject to those same kinds of regulations. And that's frankly probably how they make this model work, because they can't have people probably who have, you know, all kinds of medical problems and issues. This is really probably covering people who you know, tend to be healthy and take care of themselves and maybe don't have those kind of high costs that maybe just need preventative care. I mean, how many of us have only needed preventative care for, you know, decades of our lives? And really the whole pool of insurance, traditional insurance, is covering those people who do have the higher medical expenses. So I think this concept kind of bridges that, this concept of the healthcare sharing kind of bridges that, hey, we have a group of people that want to cover, we want to cover each other, we want to share these costs, and we're a group of people that say, hey, we're all pretty healthy. And so that's why they have certain criteria and why they have certain conditions. So the pre-existing conditions is any medical issue diagnosed, treated, or even symptomatic before joining the health share group. It includes, you know, a diagnosis from a doctor. They're going to look at what medications you've taken, what kind of symptoms you've experienced, even without a diagnosis, and treatments received. Then they have a phased in, and this is all, you know, general information, just FYI, phased in sharing approach. Most health shares, we're going to call it health shares, use a multi-year phased in model. They have in year one, for example, no sharing for expenses related to a pre-existing condition. So it wasn't that they would necessarily, you know, not take you in, but they might not pay for pre-existing condition kind of medical needs or coverage. Year two, they might have limited sharing, and the example was up to $15,000 to $25,000 after meeting your personal responsibility amount. Year three might have increased sharing limits. Year four, some programs stop considering the condition as pre-existing or raise the sharing cap. Exceptions and flexibility. Some conditions may be excluded from pre-existing status if well managed, may be shareable, and they give as examples high blood pressure, high cholesterol, or type 2 diabetes if controlled. Again, it probably depends on the health share, healthcare share organization. They allow membership regardless of pre-existing conditions, but does not share costs for those conditions until eligible. So that could be an exception or flexibility. And they may offer repricing tools to help reduce costs, even if sharing isn't available. They have a special note for seniors. Some programs waive pre-existing condition limits for members 65 and older, depending on the plan. Now, you heard me mention, I think that there is a caveat for age 65 or older health insurance plans. When someone goes on Medicare and they have a supplemental plan, for example, I think I understood at one point that they may, if you switch plans, when you first go on a supplemental or Medicare, they're not doing like a health check. It's like your get out of jail free pass the first time. If you later switch and try to switch back to something else, then you may end up having to go through like underwriting for that. This may cover those people that might have some pre-existing conditions. It all depends. So healthcare sharing programs offer varying levels of maternity care. So remember I said that under the Affordable Care Act regulations, there had to be minimum eligibility for certain kinds of care. Mental health was one, and maternity was one, and pre-existing conditions. In the healthcare sharing programs, there could be varying levels of maternity care. It's crucial to understand the specific rules of each provider. And this, there is a summary of how it might be handled. For example, because these are faith-based typically, and we might see this expand. That's why I thought we should get in front of understanding it. If we see these kinds of programs expanding, general rules across most health shares, there would be a marriage requirement. Again, faith-based. Most programs only share maternity costs for married members. Waiting periods, typically 60 days to 12 months before maternity expenses are eligible. So they don't want you jumping on this and, you know, having a baby a month later. Plan restrictions, only higher tier plans may include maternity benefits, pre-eligibility reviews they require before delivery to confirm shareability, out-of-pocket costs. Members often pay a higher deductible or initial unshareable amount for maternity. So that was kind of general rules across most of the health share programs for maternity coverage. Program-specific maternity benefits. impact health sharing. Again, the waiting period, there may be a sharing limit. It might include postpartum, it might include complications, delivery, or again, impact sharing. I don't know what that might mean. Providers, any licensed MD, DO, or certified midwife, I expect that that's what they're saying. They would share those costs. Special notes, must request pre-eligibility review. Newborns can be added within 30 days. And then, you know, anyone can kind of search for these types of plans and what might fit for their criteria. So there's different plans and there's a number of them now. So, you know, I don't know how far back this goes. That's the one piece I didn't research. I think they've been around for a while. Again, I think I saw a number from 2018. So sometimes you search and you might not have the most up-to-date information, but someone had written an article on this that I found from what I would call a reliable source in 2018. And I think there was like a million people on these plans at that point. I don't know what it is today because I couldn't find as much information on it as I ordinarily like to find. But the different health share providers, maybe that health-based, it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to be affiliated with that particular religion, but some may do that. Waiting periods could vary. Sharing limits could vary. But that's the kind of criteria that you would be looking at and comparing. Just like on regular health insurance, we compare premiums, we compare copays, we compare deductibles and co-insurance costs. They have kind of, I'm not going to say similar because it's not health insurance again, but they may have criteria that you're going to need to understand. What is your monthly premium? What is your waiting period? What is the sharing limit? What kind of plan requirements might they have? And it could vary. I've looked at some of these plans and it could be 30-day waiting period, 60-day waiting period, 90-day waiting period, sharing limits of, you know, $12,000, sharing limits of $125,000. So it probably depends on, you know, what kind of premium you're looking for and what you might be eligible for. Other waiting periods, 3 to 4 months. So you kind of have to really do your homework on these, I would suggest. Again, not insurance, but I've mentioned that I think we need to be aware of it. I've had two clients who've done it who have seemed very, very happy with it. And where I see really kind of a bubble of where this could, you know, be important or someone might think could be an option is for our early retirees. When someone retires at, let's say, 62, so you've developed wealth, you might have a pension, you might have Social Security, let's say you retire at 63, okay? So you have a pension, you're not eligible for Medicare for a couple years, so your income might still be high from interest and dividends and a pension and maybe Social Security. It doesn't mean you're Medicare eligible. And maybe COBRA was just, you know, too much and you're looking for an option and you're super healthy and you've been in good shape and you did all your doctor's appointments and preventative care before you, you know, walked out your last day at the office and you think this could work for you and you have other resources and financial means to cover, you know, unexpected cost or higher sharing cost. Maybe you're going to get a low premium and maybe this would work for you, but you can review some of these plans to see what would be work again with your the criteria. If it's faith-based and it's something you don't agree with, then maybe that's not the one you go with. You go with this other one. Maybe the family plan with, you know, ABC share plan is not as good as XYZ share plan for a family. Individually, it might have been better, but as a family, it doesn't work as well. But again, my 63-year-old client might not need a family plan because they've raised their family and they just need a bridge until they get to Medicare, which is at age 65. And keep in mind, Medicare, you have to kind of be on top of that 3 months ahead of time. Make sure that you notify Medicare. If you're not already on Social Security, then you're going to have to notify them. If you're already on Social Security, they will send you something automatically. And you just have to be aware of the open enrollment periods for when you might be eligible. Okay, well, I hope this helped some of our listeners kind of try to have some basic understanding. And again, you know, my little caveat is I just wanted to learn more about it. I'm not an insurance agent. I just wanted to kind of see what we could explore as some things to pay attention to when we're looking at insurance. You should, you know, contact your insurance provider or your employer, your HR, to kind of have a better understanding, or Medicare even, to help you navigate these decisions. I want to thank Cindy and Bob for being here tonight. I want to thank Bridger. Thank you, listeners. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. And next week, I don't know what I'm talking about next week, so we'll just find out next week. Be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices. Have a great week.